Welcome to episode 65 of Sound Out Wave, the first podcast to reach planet Earth from Cybertron. I'm Nell, and I'm great at Transformers.
And I'm Greg, and I'm getting better at Transformers.
And this week, apparently Transformers annuals are a thing again. We're back.
Yeah, it's the quintannual.
Yeah, it only took us, I guess really like 4.5 years, maybe not quite that much, but yeah. But here we go. It's another Transformers annual.
Here we go. Look at this happy boy up on the cover.
Oh my goodness.
Look at that smile.
Right. Immediately we have some Priscilla artwork.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. It's so cute.
It's top notch.
It's so sweet. It's so good. Yes, he looks very, like a bee. He's a very happy, smug boy.
I have to wonder who made the stained glass, but like, good job.
Somebody's been watching him. Somebody's been chronicling the life of Bumblebee. You had pointed out when we were both looking at this earlier, the one on the right, there's a panel on the right. And listen, we love this cover. We do, because it's beautiful.
It's a great cover.
But there's one of the panes. Has Optimus kind of close up on B.
It
looks pretty intimate.
It's Fabio. We got to, you're about to buy this cover at Rite Aid. Yeah. But you know what? Why not? Right?
Why not? You know, there are people out there who were into it.
Just Optimus and B shippers.
Yeah.
Bumblemas.
Opti-B. Prime B. I don't know what you would call that ship.
Well, now you got me wondering, if Bumblebee became a Prime, what would it be? Bumblemas Prime, wouldn't he?
I think so. I don't know. Bemis?
Bemis. Oh, I love it. Bemis Prime.
Bemis Prime.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's his formal title? Well, do not laugh when you say it.
That was the 2017 Transformers Annual, everybody. We'll
see
you next week.
Call it a night.
Transforminauts. No, yeah.
Respect your prime.
There's a book here.
There is a book here. It's a big book. Because, of course, as we remember, with the annuals from 4.5 years ago, it's like the size of a double book.
Yeah.
Extra filling.
It's worth that extra buck or two that they cause, because we get some interesting stuff in here.
Yes,
we open.
It's a good book.
Yeah, we open in a place that we kind of recognize.
Yeah,
and it's not looking good.
Right, like it's this shadowy kind of environment, which comes into clarification later. But so it's this shadowy city, and like it almost. It's got almost this dustiness about it. And we can see that there's some narration over top, which we quickly learn is Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
And he's remarking on Bumblebee's last words, and the fact that his last words were, "We are stronger together than apart." And of course, so this is kind of a throwback. If we will think back to Dark Cybertron, which is when we lost Bumblebee, of course, when Crystal City became a singularity, when Soundwave was trying to, or pardon me, Soundwave is a sweet good boy, when Shockwave was trying to turn the entire universe into a singularity,
right.
And instead Crystal City became the singularity.
He was trying to make everything into one thing, which is him.
Yes, yes.
And now here he is, in a sense.
It's just a pretty little, it almost looks like a Ghastly, like a Pokemon.
I love it. They're out playing Pokemon Go. They're going to capture this Ghastly.
That's what Optimus and Pura Magna we see are the two looking at this Ghastly that used to be Crystal City.
And Optimus is saying, like, "Hey, Pura Magna, check it out. My friend's in there somewhere." And Pura Magna's like, "I know. I've seen this."
Like, yeah, this is why I'm here, dog. This is what called me here.
Yes. Yeah, so we see in this issue we will get some of her story, some good delicious origin for Pura Magna.
Yeah.
And she mentions, you know, she lived here, and she's wondering, well, why do you care about it? And he's saying, oh, I just told you, my friend is in there somewhere.
And he's kind of like, they're reflecting back. So also, apparently, sidebar, everybody. Apparently, I think this story is actually supposed to be after issue 6 of Optimus Prime, and we haven't gotten there yet. I apologize.
Which I was going to say, because, like, these two, were punching each other very recently.
Very, very heightened tensions the last time we saw these two. And so, sorry, we're going a little bit out of order.
Stick with it, everybody.
I mean, if we think about Pyrrha and Optimus, I think we could surmise that, like, listen, it obviously has already come to blows. Pyrrha punched him right in the face. Not undeserved, by the way. And, but, I mean, we like these characters. They're both trying to do what they think is right, which is true for a lot of these characters. But so we see that whatever will happen, so we still don't know all the things that are going to happen in Optimus Prime 5 and 6, but clearly at some point they come back here and Optimus felt it right to bring her here and be like, listen, I just kind of want to rap with you. Like, we both get angry really quickly.
Let's,
like,
get fresh.
Let's open this up, you and I.
Be real with me, Pyrrha Magna.
Let's just have a real moment.
Smash cut to Desert Storm.
We go to outside.
Yeah, a jet flying through a sand blast.
And it's a beautiful jet.
Beautiful jet.
Red, white, and blue.
He's gosh darn Starscream.
It's that good old boy Starscream. And of course, naturally, when we see him, as we've grown accustomed, he's speaking to somebody who initially is not there for us to see. But we know he's talking to his imaginary friend, Bumblebee, soon to be.
Or the ghost of Bumblebee.
The ghost of Bumblebee. But yes, and Bumblebee, and this is where it does get interesting, because the ghost of Bumblebee, who is chattering to him, and of course Starscream is annoyed by this, but he was trying to tell him, like, listen, it's really dusty out here. It's going to clog up your intakes. You are a jet. Like, so, like, he's a helpful, mindful, imaginary friend slash ghost.
He's Siri.
He's basically Siri. That's what Starscream doesn't know. He programmed this into his phone and just forgot about it.
I think I just implied that Siri is a ghost, which is terrifying.
Ooh.
For every iPhone, they kill somebody and trap its soul inside.
I just, like, gave my iPhone such a glance down. Like, are you... I was tempted to say, hey, Siri, but I think... Yeah. He only responds when he's plugged in.
Well, not only that, but this is infamous among podcasts. I'm going to have to bleep that, because otherwise everyone who's listening's phone will activate.
Sorry. Yep.
I so many shows I listen to have to say, like, yo dingus instead of hey person.
I wouldn't call him that.
But yes, we see B saying, like, hey, you got to be careful. And Starscream is like, I think I know how to fly.
I think I've flown a little bit. I was basically born this way, baby.
I'm just walking because I want to.
Right? It is so funny, because then Bumblebee's like, look at you, former leader of the Decepticon Seekers, and now you're seeking again. What goes around comes around. Which you're just like, Bumblebee, shush. Even the writer, it's just like, come on, man.
And we find exactly what he is seeking, which is to say, Pyrrha Magna and Optimus Prime.
Yeah, he's also coming to, like, he's followed them to where Crystal City once stood, and now the Singularity exists in the shelter of this cave, which is, yeah, where Optimus and Pyrrha are. And somehow Starscream goes unnoticed at the front of this cave as, these two great warriors continue to have a discussion. The discussion that kind of bridges the gaps here in the stories and whatnot, it is the kind of flowery talk that we're used to from Optimus, and even a bit from Pyrrha Magna. But yes, I guess to take away here, they're trying to come to an understanding together. Yeah. Or at least that's what Optimus
they're,
is
for. They're trying to
here.
Understand each other.
Yeah. If only they could understand one another.
I will say, real quick, that panel where Starscream, like, sees them in the cave, I just love how boxy Optimus looks. Like, because he's just standing with his sort of our hands on his hips.
Yeah.
And he just looks so, like, there's just something so Hank Hill about him. He's just like... It seems like an excessively Optimus image right there for some reason. I don't know why I felt compelled to point that out.
No, I like it. I like it. I'm with you. I hadn't taken the taken the time to appreciate it, but you're totally right. It harkens back to Gen 1 a little bit, and to even Transformers Prime, the show.
Yeah, I would say you nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, yes, Priscilla's artwork, we just love it. She's great. I am a little biased because also Priscilla's just a lovely person and I think she's wonderful. But come on. We all know this is beautiful. We like looking at this stuff.
Yeah, it's way good.
It's really good. But yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm
Yes.
glad that was your remark on how often this looks in that panel.
But no, as you said, yes, they're sort of comparing ideals, and Paramagnus saying like, hey, you're like throwing away everything that could possibly matter about your past. And Optimus is saying like, I don't let it weigh me down. And she's like saying, yeah, you
She's like,
fucking do though.
bullshit.
Like all the
Yeah.
time. And he's like, well, I
And
mean,
he's,
I work on
I guess you got me there. He
it.
says, you're right. But then here, and then, because yes, which I do love that she's like, come on, man. He's like, all right. Yeah, no, you're right. And then I really like these panels. Because Pyrrha says, tell me of your friend that died here. And I like that Optimus's response is, which one? Which, and Pyrrha Magna even remarks, even your enemies you call friend. And because, of course, we know Optimus Prime means Shockwave, too.
He done
Like,
gone dated that guy.
he loved that guy. And
He even says
I
he was
just,
complicated.
yeah. Which, like, I do, like, I made a note here. Do you think that John knows that, like, we want that sweet Prime Wave? Do you think?
I
Or
hope
do you think
so.
he's just, yeah, like, I do too. I just didn't know, yeah. I'm like, I wonder if I'm just coming at this with my own ridiculous mindset. But to me, yes, this is very sweet, and it's like, it's bittersweet.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I think he's definitely aware that, like, obviously he's written a lot of emotional weight between the two of them, and I'm sure he's
Sure,
aware
which I
that, yeah,
appreciate.
that people care about that emotional weight, that it's one of
Yeah.
the smarter sort of dynamics in the story, I would even
Yeah,
say.
it's very nuanced.
'Cause my understanding of things is that before they didn't really have a lot of,
No, you're
yeah.
to yeah, which gosh, and that's yeah, I have to like always step back every now and again because I'm like, right, no, you're totally right. Well, and I think that's maybe part of it too. I'm like, I wonder if I kind of grasp a little bit tighter to things because I know how it is like outside of IDW, and we don't always get these kind of I don't know, these
The
slower
dynamics,
moments.
yeah.
Yeah, these more minute dynamics between characters and whatnot. Because of course even during Shadowplay and then during Dark Cybertron, to me that was all and I think to everybody, obviously, like he wrote it in such a way and I don't know like what was all just John or then during Dark Cybertron, what was John and James, but he did write it in a way that it was heavy but good. Like it made sense. Like it all
Sure.
came together very well. And of course, yes, Shadowplay was written by James,
Yeah,
so that's where kind
for
of that was
being the
built.
to get off topic a little bit, for being the first event like crossover that Transformers had, I think that Dark Cybertron had a lot of cool stuff going on, and it did
Certainly. I'm
resolve itself
glad.
better than a lot of comic book events.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah,
Because, of
I
course,
thought there was cool stuff. Maybe I just like Shockwave a lot. I don't know. I think he's cool.
Well, you know what? And that's part of it, too. And I will, and I'm sorry. Yeah, we are just diverting here.
Yeah.
But I think that is a bit, and I know I'm biased towards him as well. Because, of course, yeah, I've always really enjoyed Shockwave. So getting such a good and like heavy story out of him, and of course, in Shadowblade, getting that like bomb dropped on us
Yeah.
regarding Shockwave was huge, and I loved it. And it hurt so much, but I loved it because he is a character that if you like, could very easily be just written off as like, oh, well, whatever, that's just how he is. So I
Sure.
like that we have kind of like this reasoning behind it, and that we have almost a whole other person behind him as well, too. But I love also the idea that Optimus never stopped caring about him. Like, even when he became the Shockwave that we presently know, that we know better than the Senator, that Optimus still, like, that's always just, I mean, that's what I was thinking. I was
Right,
like,
that every
it would
time he
be,
looks at him, that's what he sees.
right. Like, he still is like, no, that's, yes, this is a person. And this actually kind of comes up in a couple pages here. But yes, so the fact that immediately when Pyrrha asks about his friends who he lost here in this singularity, that is what used to be Crystal City. Of course, Optimus isn't going to forget that, like, to him, that's much more than one person.
And I really like this exchange of dialogue because Optimus tells Pyrrha Magna that Shockwave was the one who basically fitted him for the Matrix. And, you know, after that, he was impurated and changed. And she says, do you blame him? And he goes, no. Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff he did. Let's be real. Right.
I do. I really, really appreciate that because this isn't the first time we see this from Optimus. I feel like we get this from Optimus much more than we get it from other characters, especially other characters in power, like Megatron, for instance. We get instances of Optimus being uncertain. Like, he responds with a certainty, and then after a beat, he's like, well, and then, like, he kind of second guesses himself.
Yeah, I really like this because he's like, recognizing that this idealized version of Shockwave that he holds, Shockwave still murdered a bunch of people.
Like, there's still, even when he was a senator, there was still some, like, he was a sweet, beautiful idiot, but, like, even just fitting Optimus Prime for the Matrix, or Orion Pax for the Matrix, he didn't ask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, There were some problems there. And so, yes, I appreciate it very, very much. It's a little tiny thing that could easily just be, like, blown by. But we on this show appreciate it.
Yes, which I think is evidenced by the fact that it's about a page. And it's really...
this is a book about Bumblebee,
but we're sort of like, yeah, Shockwave's cool. Like,
but also, let's talk about Shockwave. But yes.
Yeah, so we get into the story, and Pyrrha Magna says, well, what about the other guy? And Alex says, what other guy?
Who? Like,
The yellow one. Yeah.
That little yellow cutie pie.
What's his name?
That little lemon cake. Let's talk about him.
Buzzy Bug.
but yeah, we do learn that, as Optimus tells us, he was the last generation forged before the primal wellspring ran dry, which means, AKA, he was a baby.
Look at this smiling boy going about his day.
God, he's so cute.
I wish I was ever that happy in my life to walk with that much swing in my arms.
Yeah, he's just strutting down the street. He's smiling at people around him, which I do want to draw attention to these beautiful bots here in the foreground.
Absolutely. I am right there with you.
They look fucking great.
Look
also,
at these babes. I want to hang out with them.
Absolutely. I went to check on them because I was like, let me look into these two. Apparently they are a nod to Stormer and Kimber from the Gem comics.
I love it.
So I'm even more in love with them. But also, because we know how these comics go, this means that they are canonically male identifying Transformers, and I appreciate that too.
There you go.
Because if we think they hadn't really had female identifying Transformers for a very, very long time. And I love that. I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want. Give me boy bots and makeup. I like it. And they like holograms, and I appreciate that too. And I think that's a Doctor Who puppy.
I was going to say, that's K-9 back there for all the.
Okay. I don't know the names, but I'm like, that
morons.
Looks familiar.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a good first panel.
It's a great first panel. Look at that. I can't get over it. You can hear the jaunty tune playing as he walks.
Absolutely. There's a little, skip in his step.
And Optimus even says he's an energy-efficient car, compact and maneuverable. He's a little smart car.
Yeah, we can see him. He was transpo. He was kind of just, he was running things to people. He was a courier. And, look, we have Sea Spray. People who know Sea Spray, yay, look, there he is. He brought him a little rudder. Is that what you call those?
Sure.
like you put
a
on the
propeller
boat.
Type, yeah.
That's, yeah.
And he's out there helping the homeless in his community and making a difference. And we see him out at the races.
Oh my goodness. And it's so cute because he goes to the races. Like, that's how he was spending his free time. We see, of course, he's hanging out with Cliffjumper, aka CJ, is what I like to call him. And And also, he's got Hubcap here. And I'm like, oh my god, please. I just want a spotlight of Hubcap and Bumblebee and Cliffjumper going to races and thinking Blur's just the hottest thing, which we see in the next panel. Oh, yay.
Blur is indeed the hottest thing.
The hottest thing. First of all, let's take a beat and look at this panel, which not that that's something that we haven't
done. We're
going
to be doing
already.
Quite a bit of that in this book.
Sorry, everybody. I love how wild everyone is about meeting Blur. We have somebody in tears. We have also huge bots. Like, look at his security bot.
Yeah.
That guy's huge.
He's a big old boy.
He's a very big boy. But everybody's losing their mind and be so excited to meet him. Blur, you're the champion on the circuit, and you're the champion in our hearts.
And there you go. That's the issue, everybody. Nice and happy, fun little backstory on Bumblebee.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Oh, no, wait.
That time
you
met Blur. That's what this was called.
The day Bumblebee's big day out.
It's a golden book. Bumblebee's day out.
I love it. And we can,
sadly,
I
no.
do see in the next panel he's hung up the signed poster he got, which
he's
is
got
adorable.
It on the wall. It's so
scotch
cute.
Taped up there, like it's a dorm room.
Oh my god, he's precious, and he's sleeping, and oh no, he's having nightmares.
Oh no, he's having visions.
They're
of
like
zombie
like,
bots.
Yeah, some zombie bots crawling
look
up
cool.
out of the ground.
They're rad designs.
They do. Great color. I think who did colors on this? Sorry.
Well, there's three colorists. Is the
oh,
thing.
There are three colorists.
So,
ooh.
Yeah.
I like semi know all these people.
There you go.
JPB, I think I know the least. Thomas Deer, I know very vaguely. And then Josh Perez, of course, is my sweet dear friend.
There you go. So pages
anyway, 5
to 19 especially are the best ones.
There you go. They're all good, nice guys. But yeah, so he's we can see he's having these nightmares and they're just kind of saying ominous things to him as nightmares do.
Yeah. He wakes up all panicky.
Yeah. And of course, as Optimus telling the story, so he's saying like, so he's trying to give his insight too on top of this.
Yes. And he says that Bumblebee, never told him what the nightmares were really.
Yeah.
Just that they
like
were
he didn't
bad.
Like talking about them. He just kind of like, yeah, like
he was too upbeat. For
he
that.
Mentioned them. Yeah.
Have you seen the way he walks?
Right. But then in this next panel, we can see his walk has changed. His gait has changed a little bit.
He's more restrained. I feel so bad.
I know. We can tell he's a less happy boy walking down the street. And then even when he's driving, he's a little distracted. Gets into a little bump with another car. He wrecks. He wrecks the speaker he was bringing to Blaster. Blaster, be nice.
Blaster, he ordered a working speaker.
And B's just not even, we can tell he's very down, and he's even walking past Scrounge, pardon me, and he doesn't have anything for him. So we can see it's, you know, when he's upbeat, he's got a jaunty tune.
Right.
Everything's music.
Coming up B, and then...
Yeah. And then the nightmare started, and now he's a bit more down, and now nobody gets that jaunty tune.
And he even has to, like, turn down his friends. Can't go.
Yeah.
And so we have another nightmare, and he's hooked through the shoulders and being lowered into a pit of Energon, and there's lava zombie robots trying to claw at him and stuff.
Yeah, it looks like a smelting pool of sorts. But he notices there's a big old tube. What do you call that?
Pipe?
a big pipe.
Good old pipe.
But it looks like a drainage kind of pipe. Like, like you'd find underground.
Right.
Or like in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Pumping lava into the room.
Yes.
But there's three
But that's kind of what's...
Figures.
Yeah, the ghosts of Christmas, past, present, and future... are asking for his help, and they're in this tunnel.
And they're saying, you can set us free.
Only you can prevent forest fires. And so he's like, okay. So then and Optimus, of course, is the one telling all of this. So he's saying, like, it was something he recognized. So he goes to the area that he thinks he saw in his dream, and P.S. Krang is here.
Where's Krang?
From Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You look when B is a silhouette and he's looking into that pit, if you kind of look just above him, if you
Oh my gosh, there's Krang.
Do you see him? Yeah.
Krang, what are you doing here?
Krang, you're supposed to be on Earth.
Krang, who let you out of that tummy?
Come on, Krang. Look, let's find your boy and get you back into business.
Let's get you back in that tummy.
So this is where B goes. Krang's hideout.
He's like, I gotta go meet up with Krang and see what's up. gosh darn, I love a six-panel grid. Yes, he's saying, you know, he felt compelled to come to this place. He doesn't really remember it, but he does sort of recognize it. And yeah. He looks around, there's a box. And he takes the box and he's like, what is going on? Is something supernatural happening? And he is sort of, you know, hallucinating again. And all these bots are saying, like, here, take it to this place.
Yeah, this is where to go. So, of course, and Optimus, even in telling this, he's stressing to Pyra Magnet that, like, once upon a time on Cybertron, you could be an innocent bot. And that's what Bumblebee was.
It's a luxury we don't have anymore.
It doesn't exist now. These bots have seen too much. So, of course, Bumblebee in his dream then sees this place that, like, all of the zombies are pointing to. So he's like, oh. So then in his real life, he takes that box that he found, and he's like, cool, I'll just deliver this here as my dream instructed.
And it seems to work.
And the Iconian Civic Center. Yeah.
And the other thing is that the voiceover is telling us is Bumblebee, it feels like he has to hide this from people. Like, he can't tell people, hey, by the way, I'm hearing voices that tell me to take things to places.
Right. He feels very much alone in this. Like, he's very afraid to tell, especially even, like, Cliffjumper and Hubcap. Like, even his close friends, he's just like, oh, no, they're going to think I've, yeah, like...
That I'm hearing voices telling me to take things to places.
Yeah, so he doesn't want to tell anybody, so he's just going to fix this on his own. So he takes this box that he finds in the pipe, and this is in the real life. But his dreams instructed him to take it to the Iconian Civic Center. He leaves it there, and blessed be the night that he gets to just sleep through it.
Heck yeah.
He doesn't have a nightmare.
Lucky. And then he gets to hang out with his... I wish I could sleep through a night.
Right? B? Tell me your secrets.
All you have to do is listen to zombie robots.
Ah, that's it. That's the key. But yeah, so then, like, he and his pals are hanging out again. These three, they're not teensy boys, but they're pretty small. And it's cute.
Yeah, reasonably sized boys.
There are three regularly sized boys.
Cliffy, B, and Hubs. And he says, like, Optimus says he didn't feel like he needed to explain himself, but it kept coming back, and...
Yep, it started again.
And he didn't know why it was happening. He was just sure that his friends would not just want to hang out with Good Time B.
Which, Good Time Bumblebee sounds like an alcoholic drink, if you ask me.
Bartender, I'll have a GTB.
Can I get one of those Good Time Bumblebees? Please and thank you.
A Good Time Bumblebee is a... tequila something with a 5-hour energy shot in it.
Oh my god. Yeah, because you got to make those trips.
You gotta be buzzing like a bumblebee.
Sure, absolutely. We're on to something here. Coming up soon, the Sound Outwave Bartender's Guide.
the hip guide to Sound Outwave cocktails for hip cats.
That's right.
But yes, no, he's finding these things in the cycle of, you know, find a thing, deliver it, and it's just getting more and more frequent. And he's going, is this, like, all I do now? And then he wakes up, and one of the things he delivered has exploded a factory.
Yes, he sees on the news, oh no, he delivered a bad thing.
Did I do that? You remember that, Urkel, from that show?
He grabs his collar and, like, cartoonishly, like, ooh, like, stretches it out. Yay, yay. That was him. He did it.
Oopsies.
You did do that. But, of course, bringing it back, of course, B is very upset by this, as you would be. Because this is never what he thought was going to happen. He was just following his dreams full of zombies.
He was doing
robots.
His dream job.
Come on, you guys. He's a courier. He didn't think this was going to happen.
But he immediately turns himself in.
Because he's a good boy.
He's a good, gentle soul.
he's a sweet soul. And we can see even like the dread bots are like on him. They're Olivia, they're stablering him. So he turns himself in, and because he knows if he does, like, there's going to be another dream, and like he's seen the extent of what's happening. And Optimus says that this is where he came in back in the day when he was please call him Orion Pax. He was a police officer, in case you did not know.
I do love that his first words in this capsule are, "I've never seen anything like this." What a SVU line.
I'm telling you, it's straight up a Dick Wolf production up in here. And he's got his good best boy Prowl with him.
What a king among men.
But you know what? We'll get into this because Prowl's here for a little while. But I was reading this, I was like, and of course I know you already have bias towards him, but I was like, Prowl's fine in this.
In it very little. He does not have many opportunities to ruin himself.
He doesn't
have
a chance to be a total douche.
His first line is, whatever, he's a Decepticon, let's lock him up.
He's mostly saying, like, Optimus, are you kidding me? Like, that you've never seen this before? In the climate in which we live?
Radicalized regardless. By Decepticons. And Optimus says, we don't know he's a Decepticon. And Prowl says, I did the math. He's a Decepticon.
Right. He's just kind of like, he did this. And he's just kind of like throwing in. So Optimus finally like, shush, fine, shut up. And of course, the more he talks, also we can see B is very distressed.
Yes. B is like, oh shit, what have I done? Like, I do love that Optimus is like, he just seems nice.
Look at him. And like, I liked him. And by the way, they're not like behind one way or whatever, two-way glass, whichever way it is. They're not behind like the glass that looks like a mirror here. They're standing at the table with Bumblebee when they're talking
about
Bumblebee.
Making eye contact with him.
They're looking directly and pointing very distinctly at him, being like, look at him. Look at his cute little horns.
Optimus is saying, hi, my name's Orion. I'll be your good cop. And Prowl is saying, my name's Prowl. I'll be your bad cop.
I will be the bad cop. I'm accustomed to doing this. My ex-husband was my good cop.
And B is like, oof a doof, get out of my head. Which yeah, I feel the same way anytime I read Prowl B. I do. We see the Judge Dreadbots, mm-hmm. which I love.
Love that. Which is also interesting because it, I was under the impression they were more of like a functionist thing, which seems to me that that shouldn't be, but whatever, I'll take it. They look great.
Well, at this point, it's, as Optimus says at one point, the apartheid is over, but like, not by much.
Sure. So it could just be a remnant. Sure. Like, they're still there. They haven't really gotten phased out. But it is interesting the fact that, like, not only is B, like, because initially it seems like B is upset by the things that Prowl is saying and, like, you know, stating that he's done. But then, yeah, him saying, get out of my head,
right,
suggests that, there's something actively happening here. And that's where Optimus is like, okay, that's, something's up. And, wouldn't you know it, at least we've read Optimus Prime, the comic books this far, because Prowl's like, yo, Jetfire, what up? I need you to do something for me. Pick up your fucking phone.
Jetfire is like, it's weird. I'm getting readings that say it's a sound wave thing. And they're like, sound waves? Never heard of those before.
Like, that seems weird.
It says, the math says right here it's being done by the Decepticon named Soundwave. And they're saying, what do you think it means? We'll have to test more. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we better run some more diagnostics on that. I think we got to get a bigger picture here. I do love in this panel when we cut to Jetfire's area, we can see he has a mug that says number one Jet.
That's pretty cute. I love it.
He is certainly, like, I like to imagine the science bots were like, ooh, we got a Jet on our team. He's the best Jet we've ever known. Let's get him a mug.
Optimus is saying, don't worry, we'll take care of this. And Prowl
is
saying,
he's trying to calm down B.
Yeah, he's trying to say, hey, buddy, look at me. I'm gonna grab your wrist. Don't freak out. We're gonna be okay.
All right.
And Prowl is saying, like, just figure out where these sound waves, as you call them, are coming from. And Optimus is saying, like, hey, just chill. We're going to be friends. Everything's going to work out. You don't got to do this alone.
Yeah, we're with you. I believe you. I know this isn't you. This isn't you in your heart. And it is, because of course Jetfire is initially like, oh, well, it'll take me a second to learn how to block these. And Prowl's like, forget it. Just tell me where they're coming from. Which, I mean, bravo to Jetfire at least.
Right.
But I do love, okay, so yeah, often very sweetly is like, it's all right, we're here. And then even Prowl is like, okay, we know you are not the one doing this, little guy, which is adorable. And so he's saying, like, okay, we're figuring this out. And I just want to point out in this panel, I really love the elegance of their hands. I love the way Priscilla draws their hands.
She's very good at hands.
She's so good at hands. They're always very expressive, and they're very elegant. It does look like they've just let go of one another, Optimus and B.
And Prowl walks in and says, Jetfire says it's some Decepticon named Soundwave. And Optimus goes, wait a minute. Do you mean that old Decepticon Soundwave?
Wait a minute.
I think I know where he is.
I think I do. And then we go to the next page and you guys.
I can't believe it.
You guys. You guys. Look at him. Behold him.
He's got his hat off.
Soundwave took his hat off. Look at him. I did a double take. I was like, what?
Yeah.
When I got to this panel.
I was like, that guy's body looks a lot like Soundwave's. What's going on?
And of course, I was like, hold up. And then you see his helmet on the table in front of him, on the coffee table, next to his mug that says number one tape deck.
Number one tape
and
deck.
There he is. He's hooked up, but we can see his beautiful mouth. Like, just behold Soundwave's rarely seen beautiful face, everybody.
Yeah.
Bask in its glory.
His sort of Oakley sunglasses eyes.
He's beautiful.
It's very interesting to see. And then we also have these other boys here.
Soundwave steals this entire page. And we just
it's true.
Stare at him and go, what? But once we tear our gaze away from him, we can see there are two other bots here, at least immediately in this first panel. The first one we learn is Ferrick, who we've heard about before.
Yeah, we know that guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was the one, just as a quick reminder for everybody, he used to be friends with Wheeljack, which is where his name was brought up earlier, and he was part of Squadron X, for those of you who have read Last Stand of the Wreckers. We will get to it eventually. And he is the one who created the Nightmare Engine, which was reffed in back in More Than Meets the Eye.
There you
Look at him. There he is. He's right here.
Also, Shockwave is here.
And I guess some guy named Shockwave. Just kidding. We love him.
Nice to take your helmet off.
That must be cool to have a face.
Sounds really nice.
There. Sounds good. But of course he doesn't say that because he's beyond caring about that.
He is like super snippy though. I love it. He's way petty. He's like, oh, too much trouble over there, Soundwave. You failing? Do you suck? Is that what's going on here?
Which is funny because, see, again, you guys, it all comes down to context because I was reading this and was like, oh, Soundwave's being a little bit considerate here, which I guess is on me.
I took it as him being like, oh, you seem weak. You must need to rest because you're a loser who can't do his job.
I mean, you're right because he does use the term, we can use attempt a less effective setting if you require respite. Fuck you, Shockwave. I'm so glad you're here. But of course, Soundwave is down for the cause. Soundwave is a Decepticon.
He's doing
right
his job.
To his core. Yeah, he's ride or die for the Decepticon cause.
Speaking of ride or die for the Decepticon cause.
How dare you? How dare you transition like that?
Look at this boy. This good little kitty man who we all love.
Yeah, back. This, look who's here.
It's so mean because we see him and we're like, I love Ravage. Ravage, you're my favorite. Good to have you back. And immediately Optimus is like, hey, Decepticons, you're under arrest. And he steps on him.
What a dick. Orion, that's not what you
that's
do to
not
a little
okay.
kid. Come on, man.
You're going to hurt him.
Jeez, you were like a million times his size.
You're going to hurt him. He's delicate.
He's just a little cat.
He's a little meow meow boy.
He's just a little meowington.
And he says we shouldn't have used our brainwashing waves that Soundwave used twice in one night. And Optimus says, you shouldn't have used them at all. He stands in the doorway and takes up space. And Bumblebee is in the corner like, hi, I'm here too.
He wanted to come with.
That's my bee voice. He was like,
ooh, it's a good voice. You should just voice Bumblebee in any future productions.
And we get a good choom from Shockwave here. Shockwave is saying, classic. Hi, Orion Pax. We have history, but we won't get to it because we have a fight scene.
We won't get to it, but I'm going to get to it. Pause, everybody. real talk for a mo. Optimus, Orion, either one, either version, any version of Optimus, seeing/talking about Shockwave, that would be heartbreaking. Like, that's something I want more in the comics. And, like, I've thought about myself. I'm like, that poor dude. He would be like, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm alone in this.
You're saying we need a Chaos Theory sit-down session.
Yeah.
There you go.
We should do that.
We just Optimus and Shockwave locked in a room, accidentally letting everyone listen in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dear John Barber, I'm writing him a letter right now. Here's an idea.
Here's my Transformers fanfiction. Please make it a comic.
And then they say, I can't read this. Because top tip, if anybody doesn't know, a lot of writers do not read fanfiction.
They're not allowed.
They accidentally steal ideas.
It's like a legal thing.
Yes. And so I would just slyly be like, you know, that might be interesting.
Imagine a world wherein...
Picture, what if we just play, like, you frame it in a game, and so you, like, inception them to make them think that they thought of it first. But anyway, it was just a thought I had when Shockwave, because that's the thing, like, clearly Shockwave, that's what's so painful here. And if we can take a further sidebar, and I'm so sorry, I'm just derailing us completely here, it does kind of make me think of, like, this is a thought I've had for Overwatch as well. I was like, Widowmaker knows all of the Overwatch heroes. Like, she remembers them. She knows once upon a time these people meant a lot to her, and now she's out to, like, kill them. So I feel similarly about Shockwave. Shockwave and Orion are basically Widowmaker and Soldier 76.
I mean, there are voice lines for the two of them, aren't there? That say something to the extent of mentioning...
Are there?
What's his name? Her husband, who was a member of Overwatch.
Gerard?
Yeah, that's him.
Ooh.
All right, we can cover it in alt mode. We'll get to it.
We'll cover it in alt mode. But yeah, that's just saying, it's just, I like those, and obviously that's no secret to anybody who listens to the shows. I like those moments where we kind of, so I appreciate the fact, and it's heartbreaking that Shockwave, specifically kind of calls out Orion and saying like, oh, it's been a while.
He's like, hey, remember all that dating we did?
Yeah, remember how into each other we were?
Can't make out with a guy who doesn't have a mouth.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Anyway.
Yes.
And then they fight.
Yeah, he tongue gun shoots him in the chest.
Yep.
And Prowl is like, hey, Bumblebee, don't be an idiot. Get back.
Stay
out
of the
way. Don't be a hero.
And I do love, because Prowl says, leave this to the professionals, which, Prowl, you were hilarious. We will never forget you in Shadowplay. You had never even fired a gun. Give me a break.
I love it. And so we see Soundwave ripping these sort of broadcast cables out of his head. And they're saying, we need to run. Ravage is attacking Prowl, which is a new phone background.
it's pretty vicious.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Soundwave's like, he looks great getting himself here. He's putting his helmet back on.
Bumblebee Dungon punches Soundwave. He's like, hey, you big meanie.
He throws his little body into him. He's like, I might only be half your size, but oof, I'm going to run right into you.
I do love it because Bumblebee attacks him saying, you did this to me. And Shockwave is like, it was a group effort.
He certainly did not do this alone. Do not be mistaken, little yellow robot.
Don't give him the credit.
Like, pardon me. Well, and then Shockwave fires at him, to which Bumblebee just jumps out of the way so that Shockwave ends up shooting Soundwave.
Which I'm sure Shockwave is just torn up about.
He's just like, oh, shit. Anyway. Who cares? Ravage is grabbing Ferrick, and Soundwave is left on the ground, or Ferrick's grabbing Ravage. It's hard to tell what's even happening here. There's a lot of action. Yeah, Soundwave is left here, because then Prowl's shooting Shockwave, and he does kind of lament, and this is where I was like, maybe we'll get a moment of appreciation for Prowl from Greg, because he does lament the fact that Bumblebee quips.
I mean, yeah.
Because he tells Shockwave he looks like he could use a hand, and I'm just like, oh, B, do not.
B, stop. Don't Bumblebee is certainly one of those guys.
Shush.
And Bumblebee's sort of like he's literally pounding his little fisties on Soundwave's chest, saying like,
right,
you're so mean, why would you do this? I thought the Decepticons were supposed to be nice.
He really is, because he's not like punching him, he's just like how you might like hit a table when you're hungry.
Like slamming his fist down.
Yeah.
And Soundwave is like, kid, get off me.
And he uses like sound waves, as he's known to do, to kind of like distract and throw Bumblebee off. I do love that, like, Soundwave does not lay hands on B,
right?
Even in self defense,
he's just pushing the kid away.
Yeah, like he has his hands over his head. He's not going to strike back, and then he just uses his sound waves, which of course, like, obviously not comforting to Bumblebee, but they're not like. Soundwave's a big guy. If he wanted to, he could have, you know, fought back, but he chose not to. So just, you know, another point for a dear sweet boy.
If a kid starts punching you, you don't, like, just wail on the kid.
Some people might.
I guess.
Some people might in this universe.
That's very true.
Right? Exactly. Soundwave is a good sweet boy, and we chose well. And then he runs away, because he's like, oof, I'm getting out of here. I'm not fighting these guys.
Right. And they're like, good job, we did it, as the place is burning around them.
Right. Congratulations, everyone. They probably won't do that again, but if they do, we'll just find them again. We can see, so Optimus and Prowl and Bumblebee are all escaping, and we can see Ferrick and the waves are escaping. And of course, poignantly, we see on this panel, Ferrick says, this nightmare transmitter, which is what they were using on Bumblebee, he says, this nightmare transmitter is intriguing. Boom! He creates the nightmare engine.
There you go.
Full circle, everybody.
Glad we wrapped that thread up.
Done. See you next week.
And Soundwave is saying, like, hey, that sucks. Why are we even doing this?
Yeah. He's, again, good sweet boy. He's like, nah, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not gonna get into people's heads.
What happened to the power of our ideals?
Yeah, he just wants to go he wants to go sit on a park bench with someone and just rap and be real with them.
He'd be like, hey, let me leave you with some literature.
Let me give you some words of wisdom here. Decepticons.
And we see, them flying off. Optimus is saying, like, well, I mean, we probably should have prepared a little bit more before we just stormed in there.
Yeah.
And Bumblebee is like, hey, can I be your guys' friend?
Yeah, that was kind of great. You guys helped me.
You stood up for each other.
Yeah.
You didn't call me weird when I had zombie voices in my head.
And he's saying, also, Blaster, I did totally ruin his delivery.
That's true.
So
I'm out of a job.
He probably left me a bad review, if you guys are hiring.
One star.
smashed his speaker.
I'm not leaving him as a reference. we're going to take a break here at the midpoint of the show to talk about the Max Fun Drive, our favorite time of year.
That's right.
here on the Maximum Fun Network. So after that, we cut back to Optimus and Pyra Magna, and Pyra Magna's like, well, then what happened? And Optimus is like, oh, I mean, I don't really need to talk about it, because the readers already know.
Well, and I love it, because he's like, then, I mean, what do you mean? Bumblebee joined us. And then Pyra goes, and then he died. Which, like, fuck and shit, Pyra.
It's she could stand to have a little bit more tact, but I think it is funny.
She was just like, boom, he joined you?
He's like, he was on our team. He's like, well, then he got killed. What was the deal there? Like,
he's like, there were roughly 4 million years between like, then.
You know,
and
yada,
then.
Yada, yada.
Whatever. And we can see, of course, Starscream, the Voyeur, still listening in. And he hates it. He's like, oh my god, Autobots are disgusting.
This heartfelt bullshit is not what I came here for.
He calls it squooshy, not squishy, squooshy.
It is a very cute exchange because he's talking to Ghost Bumblebee. And he says, it's so squooshy. Who talks that way? And Ghost Bumblebee goes, I don't know, nice people?
Starscream's never met any of those Bumblebee shoes.
What a well-behaved little man.
Oh, goodness. Starscream, he'll learn eventually. He's hanging out with Wheeljack. He might pick some of this up, but who knows. He's got Wheeljack for a friend, tentatively, and Bumblebee for an imaginary friend. Maybe someday he'll learn. But he does, even then, he can't help but get a dig in on Bumblebee. He's like, a ton of Autobots have died, and you're the one that I get stuck with. I
can't believe we gotta put up with you.
Damn, Starscream. And somehow, Optimus and Pyrrha still do not hear them.
Right. And they're just going on, and Optimus is like, the moral of the story is friends are what really matters.
Friendship is magic, Pyrrha Magna. That's what I'm trying to tell you here.
And he says, having other perspectives is very important. Not believing you are the only one with the answer. And she's like, yeah, but you're prime, so...
Well, and even to that, yeah, she's like, but what if you do have the answer?
Yes.
You're supposed to, like, forego that because of a teamwork? That sounds dumb.
Yeah, she says, unity is more important than being right. And Bumblebee's like, oh, who's this?
What's all this? Who this is? And Starscream's like, she seems cool.
Yeah.
She's giving him the
I like her more than Optimus.
That's for sure. If I had to pick one of these people, I'm choosing her.
And Bumblebee says, well, maybe she'll be a good influence. Yeah. And Starscream like, oh my god, shut up, I don't care.
Bumblebee is that person who, like, sometimes this will happen playing Overwatch, where, like, you're frustrated because you keep losing, and, like, your friend will be like, well, I mean, they had to, and you're like, shush, I know they were just also trying to win. I'm just being frustrated.
Just let me have this.
Just let me vent for just a moment. I'm not actually mad at that person, I promise. Although Starscream probably is. Well, he's sure. An angry boy. But yes, so I get where you're like, Bumblebee, just quiet. Please, give me a moment.
More just saying nice things about the art. On this page and the page before, they do one of my favorite things, which you do in the episode art a lot, which is to give the bots pupils, made out of light. Like, on the previous page, Starscream has such a dismissive look, and it works so well. And it's like, it's just reflection. It's not like those are actually there or anything, as we can see with Bumblebee. Right. But it's such a nice little trick that I really like. And on this page, we have Pyrrha Magna looking at the singularity, and it makes the same sort of effect.
Yes, I did appreciate that very much. Because, yeah, you can tell it's a singularity, but it looks at the in the panel like she has pupils.
Very
yeah.
intense eyes.
Yes, very intense.
But yes, and she's saying, all right, well, you told a story. This is the annual. I should probably tell a story too, huh? We can't have
48
pages of the same thing.
Oh, hell no. People would riot.
Right. And so we go to Kaminus. Where everything is great and nothing is bad ever.
They were just living in harmony. Oh, wait, everybody was starving and it sucked.
Yes. And we see, this is interesting because Pyrrha Magna is second in command to Presidia Magna, which is cool.
Yes. We meet Presidia Magna and...
Great design. At least, I love Presidia Magna.
Certainly. And of course, right. We come in on the Torchbearers, which Pyrrha still was, but she was not Magna at this time.
Right.
So
we learned Magna is a title.
Yes, yes. Very cool, very good to know. And she does even say, she tells Optimus, like, I was already in the Torchbearers at this point. Maybe someday I will grace you with the stories of how that even came to be. But at this point, just accept that I was already in the Torchbearers. And just kind of talking about how they were there to enforce the justice of the Way of the Flame. They were the elite agents of the Mistress of Flame, which we do know. But yeah, a nice little reminder and telling anybody who did not know.
Right. Exposition.
Yeah. And so she's... But right. Just really like the fact that like they didn't have enough energon. And
yeah, it sucks here.
Yeah, it's bad and it drives people to do bad things. And they were... A town had been struck by bandits, and they've been called to it.
Yes, so these are essentially some some hard, cool people, these torchbearers, is what we immediately realize. And they come in and they solve problems.
Yes. They're very similar to people they're in a way, they're similar to the people who have read Last Stand of the Wreckers to the Wreckers. And so, yeah, they land in Parvus Oppidum. And they're immediately greeted by Jumpstream, which, wait a minute, we know a Jumpstream.
Good old Jumpstream. Jump Shot.
Like, wait, she's just in different paint colors right now.
Good old three-pointer. yeah, and we learn about Jumpstream's Conjunct Endura.
Which immediately made us go, what? Oh, no, that's exciting. Yes, her Jumpstream's Conjunct Endura, a.k.a. wife, called the Torchbearers, because she had been attacked by this bandit. And so they're here to kind of, like, help out this little town.
Right, and they're saying, thank God you're here. We're only a couple dozen people, and we couldn't really handle an invasion like that. And Presidia is like, yeah, I mean, it's terrible here.
Yeah, this place and sucks.
Jumpstream is like, oh, I mean, it's kind of where I live, so like, that's fine. as someone who has lived less than an hour away from Detroit his whole life, I know this feeling very well.
Sure. As someone with family in Detroit, yeah, I get it. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're just like, no,
It's kind of a place where people live, so it's not a third world country. But yeah.
People also live there too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they lay out that this is a sort of mining place looking for any sort of last energon deposits.
Right. People are just scouring their planet. They're just looking around Kamenes for any energon. Everybody's so hungry. And
then this, like, bitchin' car drives up. What a rad looking vehicle.
So rad. And who is it but Dust Up? And then, oh my God. And it just, people, I could say, and of course, anybody listening to this show already knows all this, everybody was very excited to learn that Jumpstream and Dust Up are officially married to each other. It's very, very sweet and very cute, and I'm glad too the Torchbearers are married to each other. It's adorable.
There you go.
But of course, at this point, they are not Torchbearers.
Right, they're just peoples.
They're just peoples who live in this little town that need help.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we've met them before, but I think this is the first, like, confirmed Gal Conjunct Endura, right?
I think so. So I think this is the first, confirmed to both female identifying robot conjuncts.
Yeah,
team pair. Yeah. Married couple.
The only married town
The only
defenders.
Married torchbearers in the tri planet area.
And we do see how just, like, totally jazzed Dust Up is. She's totally fanning out and being,
even
they're like, whoa, like, calm down.
Cool it. Okay, they're here. Just take it easy. Bring it back.
Very cute.
Of course, Pyrrha's like, all right, let's help you out. Let's go see where you keep your energon, because that's what they were after.
Right.
So Dust Up is taking her down, and she does tell Pyrrha that there were two attackers. She had to kill one of them, and it was some kind of dog or something.
Right. Some kind of animal. I do like that Pyrrha says, well, it's very impressive. And Dust Up is like, oh, if you want to see impressive.
Aw. She's like, feast your eyes on this.
Check out all this energon. And it's like a kiddie pool.
It's a little kiddie pool, sort of filled with energon, which, it's very, very sad. Because, of course, to her, this is a lot. And Pyrrha even says that. She's like, when you have nothing, anything seems like everything. So to her, this is a great store of energon.
Right.
To Dust Up, this is a lot.
And Dust Up even says, why did you say it like that? Yeah, because
of course Pyrrha's like, oh God, that's it? Yeah. And she's like, yes, that's a lot. Why did you say it like that? But before she can, she's just like, oh, okay, just show me who you killed. Where is he?
Right. But that gets interrupted by an attack.
Uh-oh. Oh, shoot. Get back up there, you guys.
It is a bunch of crazy aminals with, like, mm-hmm. stuff on them.
Yep. So it's very, it, like, harkens back to Beast Wars in these kind of panels here. So, of course, by the time Pyra Magna gets back up, she's just regaling Optimus about all of this. So she's saying, like, Fastbreak, who was one of the Torchbearers at the time, she's fallen in this fight. Rustdust, who is currently a Torchbearer, she was also hit, but avoided getting killed. And she's saying that Presidia tried her best to rally everybody. And it's sad because she says the hard truth is that Presidia was never cut out to lead.
Aww.
So even then she knew. So like Pyra's always kind of had a mind for this, which I mean, respect.
Sure.
Like girl's always been like, I know what's up.
It's like, I'm gonna have your job.
I'm gonna get that Magna title and I'm gonna get that Matrix. Just wait. But then of course she's saying that like she Jumpstream we see gets hit by one of these people, which of course sets Dust up off. And Presidia gets hit.
Both
the twins.
Yeah, the twins, Stormclash and Skyburst, get hit by a big old bat.
Big old bat. So yeah, so everybody's just really getting the beat down here. The twins fall out of the sky. They're both helicopters, by the way. Great. And yeah, it's just like this big vicious fight. And I do love the Jumpstream. Like, that's it. We're going to murder these people. And Dustup's like, hold on. Just come on. Don't go die. Don't go get killed because you want to just run out there.
That thing is like six of you.
Right. There's a lot. They're very big. And so, of course, Pyra's just she's trying to get everybody away. She's trying to take control here because this is what the Torchbearers do. And oh, it's very sad. Presidia is...
Yeah, Presidia is leaking Energon hard, and Pyra's like, what? Presidia seems to have a final message if they want to convey, saying yeah. Behind, but Pyra is not quite understanding. And
right.
Yeah.
She turns, and yeah, that last message is the last she saw Presidia, and then she turns and is greeted by something she can't quite make out, and she just says... And I do love it because she says, whoever grabbed me was strong, stronger than I. And you know that's saying something, Optimus. Oh, yeah.
Owned.
I love that line.
Total burn.
Like, in your face, Optimus Prime. And I do love that when she refers to, she keeps saying dust up in her conjuncts. Jumpstream, like she keeps like being like, and she and her
wife, by the way, they're married.
Do not forget these two.
She and her wife, like, who she's married to.
You've been friends with both of them for a very long time at this point. Like, she's like, in case you forgot, Optimus, they are married to each other. It's precious, and everybody's very excited about it. But yeah, she's saying they helped save everybody else in the town. And there was, like, this similarly, there was a singularity.
Right.
That, like, suddenly occurred.
And everything's being drawn into it, including, unfortunately, Presidia. As well as Pyra.
Like, uh-oh.
She says that her body is sheared apart and the creature pulled her free, which she says is impossible.
And weird, yeah.
But,
and she says she looked into his eyes, but even though she knew it was impossible, she did not die. And when she becomes aware again, she is greeted by the Mistress of Flame.
Heck yeah.
Oh, what up, Mistress?
Hey, that's exactly what she says. She says, oh, what up, Mistress?
She's feeling great.
I'm feeling spry and groovy. No, she's in the fetal position on the ground.
She's not having a great day. And we can see, yeah, the other Torchbearers are around. They're kind of picking up the pieces. And the town is just a mess.
Yeah, saying we promised protection and we did not deliver. And Pyra suddenly has a vision of a big, big creature.
Yeah, it's and we learn later it's Onyx. It's Onyx,
yes.
Prime.
Who is,
and
like
of course,
a big centaur bot.
Yeah, he's very cool looking. It's a very cool design.
And he's like, hey, I'm sorry to visit you at this weird time, but I wrote this poem and I really just want to like lay it out.
Please,
I'm looking for feedback, like, constructive only, please.
Right. And if you think it's cool, please memorize it.
Yeah.
And, like, just internalize it so you just, it's in the back of your mind when weird things happen.
I'm not going to say it's prophecy, but if you want to treat it as prophecy, I'm not going to be like,
right.
Upset.
Like, if you're going to take it there, I'm not going to stop you.
and it's all about, you know, end times.
Right. And he refers to Cybertron.
Right.
We'll just read it. If Cybertron be your home, Far away, never roam. Hear my message, listen and fear. Danger comes, the end is near. Just like us, you soon will rust. All shall be turned to dust.
There you go.
Memorize that, everybody, because it might be prophetic. Get some bongos in there. I do like, because it's such like, and this is not me like commenting on John's writing. Certainly not. Poetry is not easy. But I do like, it does seem like I just like to imagine Onyx was like sitting around composing those.
It was like rust, what rhymes? How can I have fear. Follow that up
here,
with here?
Near?
The end is here. Near? Well, I mean, it's close. It's not here. Near. There we go.
That's it. Perfect. That's the one.
Leans in, scribbles it on his data pad.
Yeah. Crosses out the other bit. He's just like, somebody's going to memorize this. Somebody's going to find this to be prophetic. And so that's what she's seeing. That's what Pyra Magna is like. When she rests, that's what she's hearing and seeing.
So we can only assume that this is Soundwave putting nightmares in her brain.
Right. Similarly to Bumblebee, Soundwave was like, fine, I will pretend to be Onyx Prime and go infiltrate the mind of a bot I've never met before on a world I've never heard of. Thank you.
No, but when she wakes up, she immediately knows what's going on. And she says, you know, everything went really bad and she was holding it against herself. And she says that day they lost so much for so little. There was no sign of the marauders. We vanished into the desert and tried.
Which were the beast bots.
Right. Yes. The marauders, the beast machines.
Yes.
She says, tried spending time with Rust Dust.
Yeah. Just going to hang out with Rust Dust. It was just little. And yeah, they've both been through this thing together. So, and Rust Dust is just like, it's going to come around. And Pyra's just kind of like, they're all right. This is what you believe. And like, they're asking about the twins. They haven't seen them. But then Pyra asks her where her name came from, where Rust Dust came from. And wouldn't you know it, it came from this old poem.
That's crazy.
Cosmic Rust.
It's on her live journal if you want to read it.
Right. Or on her AIM instant message, like her away message.
Yeah.
Nailed it. She's also done that thing where like when you click on it, it says your name.
Right. Exactly. and so we see Pyra Magna saying, hey, I think maybe that poem was a prophecy. And on a planet of darkness like Kaminus, light was important, and the singularity and Parvus Oppidum was a, you know, all prophecy stuff.
Yeah, like they are. She's talking about the poem being part of the light of the Forge Fire, and they are on such a dark planet. Light is everything.
Yes.
So it's part of it. It's important, and it's foretelling of a distant world of creeping rust. Pyra's flying towards this rust planet, which has been foretold to her in a poem. And when she gets there, she sees Presidia kind of being pulled into the dust. And Presidia is begging her not to leave her here and not to leave her like Antilla. And she's like, I've never even heard of Antilla. Let me go ask the Mistress of Flame, because she seems to know a lot of stuff.
And she goes and says, hey, you ready to go back to doing your job?
Yeah, she's like, are you good? You want to come back? Gonna take charge of the torchbearers?
And she says, actually, hey, I had a question. Is Antilla a thing? And the Mistress Flame is like, yeah, that was a colony that Presidia and I discovered that was, like, way destroyed, and it was in your dream. I mean,
Because Pyra tells her, like, oh, one of the last things that Presidia said, because she doesn't say, I've been having dreams about Presidia. Right. She just says, one of the last things she said was about Antilla. And so, of course, the Mistress of Flame is like, oh, yeah, that's the place we couldn't help. That is awful that's the last thing that Presidia was thinking of.
That sucks. Thanks for ruining my day.
Whatever. Yeah. But then she's like, but this happens because guess what? The Primes will it. And that's an absolute. You can take that to the bank.
Yeah. If this happened, it's probably because a Prime was like, hey, this should happen. And who are we to argue?
You know, let's just let it happen. Are you ready to go back to work? And Pyra's like,
kind of need you on this project.
She's like, Pyra, when can I expect you back in the office? I would hate to lose you. And she's like, I just don't know.
We have we have more prophetic dreams. Presidio is saying, hey, stop Onyx Prime. And that really throws Pyrrha.
Yeah. Because then now we're getting like a for sure name. And this is a name, of course, she's going to know. Because they know all the original Primes.
Right.
And she's like, okay, he was the master of the beasts. And she can see in her dreams, Onyx is like kind of grabbing at Presidia and like pulling her. But then also Onyx is the dude who read his poem to her at Poetry Slam. but then at the same time, she's like, okay, so I'm against Onyx Prime, but also he's a Prime.
Right.
Which means his word should be absolute. So she's a little conflicted here.
She's saying, if it wasn't the Marauders looking for Energon, if someone was a Prime, then where did he go? Why did he strike and why did he leave? And she's like, you know what? Maybe he ran because he was scared of me, which...
Hell yes.
Yeah, that's a fucking conclusion.
That's hardcore.
And
yeah, so she's like, so she comes to this thought, and I do, and it fills her with determination. And she's like, all right, if he's here, if Onyx Prime in some form is here, and he ran because he was afraid of me, because again, she started being pulled into the singularity and then was like pushed back out. She's like, okay, let me go look into this. So she's like, let me go visit that lovely wife couple of Jumpstream and Dustup.
Jump up and
Dustup. Immediately jump. Exactly. Jumpstream's like, oh my god, hi! What's up? We're happy to see
how
you.
How can we help you?
And she's like, actually, let me talk to Dustup. And so they kind of step aside, Pyrrha and Dustup, and she's like, because of course, Dustup was the one that was like, we gotta call the Torchbearers. So she's like, the Marauders didn't do this, did they?
Yeah, I'm not getting the full story here, am I?
Yeah. And so this is, yeah. So then Dustup is kind of like, okay. She does say that she thought it was the Marauders. She killed one, and she chose not to kill the other one, so she let the other one go.
Right.
To kind of draw them in. So she essentially baited the Marauders and then called the Torchbearers, because in her mind, she was like, the Torchbearers are the strongest
We'll be team able to ever. Wipe them out once and for all.
Yeah, they'll just take care of this, bing, bang, boom, and it'll be done. And then they won't have to deal with them anymore.
And
so, I get where she's coming from, but oof.
Yeah, it didn't go super duper well.
No.
And we see Pyrrha Magna goes back and speaks to Rust Dust and has a nice little beach moment.
So cute.
Get some Energon at a nice cafe.
Yeah, we see the twins, I believe, in the cafe.
Yeah, so we're montaging.
Yeah.
And so she's piecing it together that this... The light of the forge made manifest, and that there is a darkness which is Onyx Prime, who is the opposite of flame.
Yes, that's the takeaway here, is that because of course Solas is their main prime, like that's the one, that's the forge, and the forge begat the Starsaber, which begat the Matrix. So to them, the keeper of the flame is even more important. And of course, yes, like you said, the opposite of light is darkness, which would be Onyx.
Which is some rad shit to say.
It's very rad, and a great final panel here. Because they montage a little bit. It's Magna, or it's Pyrrha going to Rust Dust, and the twins, Stormclash and Skyburst, at like a bar or a cafe together. And then the Mistress of Flame kind of, we can guess from this and from the next panel that she's kind of bringing in the new Torchbearers.
Right, knighting them in some sort of ceremony.
Yeah. And we can see, yay, this Jumpstream and Dustup have joined them.
There's those bearers we know.
We love these bearers. What a great, I really love that panel. It's a very, very good panel of all the Torchbearers.
So it's an interesting sort of way to frame it, is that this is a society based entirely around the absolute will of the Primes, but deciding, hey, one of these Primes is bad. Let's form a team to kill it.
Right. Like, our whole ideal is versus this prime, the ideal of this other prime. And yeah, like that's probably what we're destined to do, or at least part of our destiny. And then we get another really great page where it kind of goes through each of the torchbearers. And so, of course, we have Pyrrha and we have Rust Dust, and then we have the twins are back to back because that's a cool classic pose.
Naturally.
And so we start with, so we kind of go, the camera's on one and then the camera's on the other. They look great. And then we go to our, the only married torchbearer team. And it's all very sweet. And I just have a question to ask here at the end, because she says, and it's really great because, of course, she's telling Optimus the story and she's saying, like, the mistress could not comprehend what they became because they've been through so much. And at first they were just figuratively standing as one, but then they became, obviously we know now that they become Victorion.
Right.
So now they literally become one. And she's saying, we drove back a prime and the prime deserved it, which makes me want to ask, who run the world, girls? That's the answer there.
Who run the world? The walking lesbian commune.
The walking lesbian coven that is the Torchbearers.
I love it.
That's who run the world.
There you go, everybody.
And Optimus is just in awe. We go to this next page, and he's just like, oh, damn, maybe you should have the Matrix. I'm kidding. He doesn't say that, of course.
Right. She does talk about the Combiner and the Combiner Wars and everything and seeing the Matrix glow. And she was like, wait, is this the real deal? Does this guy blow?
Right. Because the only prime she has now seen was a total dick.
Right.
Which, I mean, as we all know, seems a little par for the course. Not talking yeah. about you, Optimus, just other primes in general.
And Optimus is like, so this prophetic poem, is that right? You really buy into that? She's like, dog, we're looking at a singularity right now.
Like, what do you need from me, homeboy? What do you not get?
Yeah, she says she believes in the holy truth of the Matrix of Light and of the coming danger. And Optimus says, you know it's a poem, right?
And she, it's just, it is, yeah, she's, it is just funny because even he says, he has heard this before. He heard it from BlackRock. He heard it from Galvatron. So I'm like, so you know.
Right.
This isn't like this is the first time you're hearing this, Optimus Prime. But you're still a little dismissive. He's still a staunch.
What a goon.
Total goof. But yeah, so she's just
yeah,
like,
she fires
well,
back
you know
at
what?
Him.
You don't. Yeah, she says, you believe in nothing, but you are using belief to manipulate others. And he's like, I
don't know.
I believe in like a really good slice of cheesecake.
Who doesn't? Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
I would commit war crimes against some cheesecake right now.
That settles it, everybody. Next time we're all hanging out, we're getting cheesecake. Golden Girls style.
Let's do it. And he does say, I believe what you've told me and I believe what Bumblebee told me, which is kind of a cop-out answer, but all right.
Whatever.
And Starscream is heading out at this point. He's like, I've heard enough.
Yeah, that's it for me. I'm going to go. That seems like the wrap-up of this annual, he says. Yeah, Bumblebee's kind of like, this is interesting. Starscream's like, yeah, you would like it.
He's saying they were talking about you the whole time.
Right. You're the twist at the end. Hey, they were talking about nonsense like me the whole time, which is a very good line from Starscream. Thank you, Starscream. Thank you, John.
And Bumblebee's like, you really don't think I'm a ghost? And he's like, you're in my head. And you're like, of course, exactly the thing, because I'm the only one who can see you, and I made you up because I was dealing with the guilt of killing Metalhawk, rest in peace, and
R.I.P.
his fear that, like, I conjured a mental image of the guy who had Cybertron and lost it, which is my greatest fear, so I just do the opposite of whatever you tell me.
Which is, I mean, sound reasoning.
That's some sensible shit from Mr. Star.Scream.
Star.Scream is really serving it up. He's telling us stuff that I'm just like, yeah. I mean, and you all know, we were just in the Optimus Prime books where I'm like, homeboy's not wrong. He's speaking some truth here. Maybe we should stop acting like he's, not the one to listen to. So he does take off. He's like, all right, I just know I got to do the opposite of you, Bumblebee. Bye. And he pieces out. And then But we go back to the cave, because we're not done yet. And, Pyrrha's making the argument that, like, belief does not necessitate a myth. She says it's a way of ordering information and making oneself stronger via those who stand with us and those who stood before us. And Optimus is saying kind of like, yeah, but those who stand with us and have stood before us is like a burden. Like, I never forget that. It's a burden on me.
Right. And she's saying, we need to learn from the past. And he says, you need to stop living in the past. And they're right. All dramatic about it as they walk away from the singularity.
Yes. And then we go, oh, now it makes sense. Those first panels of a dark city with some like speckles and like dustiness about it. We're inside the singularity. It is Crystal City. And we realize, oh, there's a person talking to us. And they're repeating that Crystal City collapsed in on itself. And that's all like poetic and like, oh, maybe everything collapses in on itself. And we all have a black hole to carry, and we all have a torch to carry. And oh, snap, you guys.
Guess who it is?
It's
Goth Bumblebee.
It is. Because of course his last line is, we really are stronger together than apart, Starscream. Which immediately suggests that this is...
whatever is going on, he is communicating to Starscream from this quantum state.
Right. It's a real Bumblebee. Like, it's genuinely Bumblebee's subconscious, which, and I gotta say, I was very excited. I was excited to see him at the end here. Cause like, of course, when you get through Dark Cybertron, you're like, I mean, they're gonna be back. Like,
right.
You're just kind of like, you're like, come on, it's Shockwave and Bumblebee. They'll be fine. but he does, well, and this is where it's interesting, cause he does look like Goth Bumblebee, but he also sort of looks like a mix between Bumblebee and, as he is sometimes known, Goldbug, which we saw briefly before Dark Cybertron.
I don't remember when they, at all.
Oh, boy. Yeah. In Robots in Disguise, like... and this harkens back to Gen 2 of, like, the show. And Bumblebee gets, like, rebuilt. And he becomes Goldbug, but he's still Bumblebee. he just has, like, a different design because we gotta sell more toys. So, like, partway through... unless I'm just making stuff up, but I think it happens in Robots in Disguise. And, like, he gets hurt, and so then they rebuild him into Goldbug, and then he turns back before Cybertron. I don't remember, but I think at one point he has his Goldbug design, and so this kind of looks like it's a marriage between the two ideas, because Goldbug is usually a little bit darker, and he usually has, like, a face mask and stuff.
And we see him here walking this lonely road, the only one that he's ever known.
Bingo.
There you go.
There you go. And there's the annual. So now we have some firm confirmation. Bees around, which means Shockwave's around.
Which is only good news for everybody.
Everybody. Here is what is interesting. And let's take a moment to just kind of, I don't know. We can just, because I was like, this opens up some possibilities here. So we can speculate a little bit, and then we'll close out the show. But because I'm like, okay, so obviously Bee's alive, and he is communicating, at least with Starscream, which is going to be interesting to find out why that is the case. But because he was killed, and, like, I think that's what's interesting to me, is that, like, Bumblebee, in the course of Dark Cybertron, was killed before he was pulled into the Singularity.
He didn't just get absorbed. He done gone got killed.
Right. Like, he was full on shot, because that is the reason Megatron is now captain of the Lost Light and husband to Ultra Magnus. So, like, that was a big thing that happened. So I don't know. So that's where I'm like, Shockwave, though, was not killed. Shockwave just became the Singularity. You know what I mean? Like, he was the source of it.
So that's knows where I'm like, what's if up with that guy?
Right? I like to imagine they're like, I guess though, like, Thunderwing? It was Thunderwing or Dreadwing. One of them is in there. Maybe it's Dreadwing. Metalhawk, maybe? Whoever was pulled into the Singularity, I like to believe, is all alive. And it's kind of like Animal Crossing in there. There's only a couple villagers, and they're all sick of each other. And they're just, like, harvesting peaches and stuff to sell at Tom Nook's store.
So
that's my guess for what's going to happen.
That seems like the most plausible course of action, I think.
They're going to go fishing.
So there you go, everybody.
Yeah, that's the annual.
What an annual it is.
What an annual it is. It looked great. It sounds great. It was exciting to get some more info on the Torchbearers. I'm glad B is in the story again, besides just being an imaginary friend.
As far as we know, who knows what the truth is?
Who knows? Who can say? But yeah, so that'll do it for us this week.
Yeah.
And then next week, Lost Light is back.
We're going to return to the Lost Light, everybody.
We're going back to the Lost Light, but not really. We're probably just going back to
we're going back to a couple of the people we like from that ship.
Yes. As far as I know, the mutineers are not on the horizon yet.
I want to thank all of our patrons, including David Cabrera, Jay Riley, Samuel Jacques, Jacob Stevens, a.k.a. the Fifth Virtuoso, Kyle Schaefer, Bitty Bot Jazz, and Elizabeth Jackalope. Thank you guys so heckin' much.
Thank you.
That's nice of you to do. And if you want to hang out with us in McAdams each week, go ahead and check out patreon.com/soundwav. There you go.
There you go. That'll do it for us. Let's see. Transformanauts.
Transformanauts, let's hear your best poetry.
Oh, we'll snap for you. I was going to say try to make it more than a couple sentences, but who am I to say how to write a poem?
The Transformanauts, poems don't have to rhyme. They can just be words that make you feel good.
Yeah, Transformanauts, just think about what makes you happy or mad or just full of rage.
Speak from the heart, Transformanauts. Express an emotion.
For once, Transformanauts.
Open up!